Reignite on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
My next guest doesn't do anything by half. Science communicator, author, STEM ambassador, experiencing zero gravity, and even simulating a mission to Mars in the desert in Utah. Now, Dr. Niamh Shaw is just back from an expedition to the Arctic. Niamh, you've been listening there to Brad Meltzer. You're just back from this expedition. Did you go and make your own magic? Was this part of your own legacy making that Brad Meltzer was talking about?
Well, I just love how he phrased it. I'm not as aware as Brad in terms of the language or how he's kind of analysed it. But yeah, I think what I am trying to do is, you know, leave something more positive behind after I'm gone. And that's a big thing that drives me, actually, you know, because everything I do is about kind of making amends with how I limited myself in the first kind of half of my life. So, and I do really want to help others. So I'm a big believer in kindness, acts of kindness, and coming from a good place and putting something positive into a room instead of, you know, adding to the current, you know, news that we have and all that.
And given that desire to bring positivity, to be the educator, what brought you then this summer? You're literally just back from the Arctic Circle. So what were you doing there?
Well, it was an amazing experience. I was on a ship, a schooner with sails. So it was like a sailboat with 30 artists from around the world. It's an initiative called the Arctic Circle. And they gather people who are interested in science and art somewhere in the middle, who really want to express climate change, really, but not in a way that it's like, you know, in that kind of hardline kind of Blue Peter homeworky kind of sense, in a way that can kind of make it more relatable, humanize it, make more sense of it for people. So it was a privilege to be on a ship with people who thought with their emotions first. And I hadn't been around artists in a while. You know, I was a full-time actor until about 2013, and then I kept going with
on
my own
First
shows.
City.
Yeah, and kept going with my own one-person shows till about 2017, 2018. But then I kind of really felt like, you know, education and working directly in communities was a better use of my time. I forgot how the lovely state you put yourself in when you have those kind of open-ended conversations with artists, because just their thought process is just really refreshing. And I reminded myself, I actually do have that thought process in there. I'm really genuinely something in the middle. I like both of those communities, but I hadn't been in a room full of artists for a while. So it was lovely to experience the Arctic through their eyes. And then they really helped me kind of figure out, what is it I'm trying to say? What is it I'm trying to do here? You know?
And you've been to Antarctica before. Yeah. So how did the Arctic feel? What was the experience? Where did you live? How did you exist day to day as a collective?
It was great to have the Antarctic to compare it with. So we were on a schooner. So we were in a tiny cabin. I shared it with a total stranger who's now become a very close friend, Sarah Basing-Twaith. She's a fantastic composer. We all shared a room, never met before. Meals, 8 a.m. breakfast, 1 o'clock lunch, 7 p.m. dinner. Basic, but just gorgeous, you know, all sitting around together. There was 30 of us, so it was easy to kind of have those conversations. No personal space at all at any time was I ever on my own. You know, there's nowhere to go.
You must be an extrovert because...
No, I'm not. I'm introverted, actually. So what I did was I would go to bed straight after dinner. That's how I did. You know, I would put loads of energy into the day and then it's like, right, time for me, you know, and then I'd retreat to my room. And thankfully, Sarah, my cabin mate, was the same. So we would just go to bed like pretty soon after dinner.
And could you bring some of your worldly possessions with you? What kind of equipment, clothes, like did you have?
I had hardly any clothes because you're given this, you're told to bring a duffel bag because there's no room for a suitcase. So I had to bring a duffel bag, and I brought experiments for Dundalk IT. So it was a ton of stuff for them, like Google glasses and this little rover and, you know, sample jars. And then I brought as well a load of camera gear because I was there too for video and photography, because my personal project was about Leopold McClintock. I'm trying to make an interactive walk about climate action. And Leopold McClintock for Dundalk, because Leopold's from Dundalk, my hometown. And I had room for a fleece-lined pair of trousers, two sets of thermals and underwear, and kind of one of those, you know, those kind of cardigan-y kind of fleecy jackets. And then my outer layers. That was it. And because these boots, these muck boots, which were brilliant, by the way, but they took up the whole bag for me. So it was just, I had nothing and I missed nothing. I wore the same thing every day, with the exception of changing my underwear, every day for the full 2 weeks. Like, and like when I went to unpack, I said, I have no clothes. You know, I thought, you know, when you come back from something, like, oh no, I don't want to unpack. But when I unpacked, after I put all the technical stuff away, I said, I have nothing left. And
so you optimised packing for the experiments that Dundalk IT were sending you off on. And getting there, was there firsthand evidence of climate change and having this experience where you can be a quote unquote ordinary person that is trying to communicate something back now here in Ireland as a thinker, influencer, educator?
I hope so. I mean, immediately, what I seem to notice that was different to everyone else, it sort of felt like everyone's left the building. And you know the way when you walk into a room where there's been a meeting or something, and the chairs and the cups and the kind of the plates with the crumbs and everything, you know, something has happened, but everyone's gone. That's the feeling I got a lot of the time when we were, particularly as we headed up more and more north and we got to see more and more glaciers. There was one day, it was only last week, we pulled into this bay. Sarah, the our expedition leader, so she's been working on being the expedition leader on this program for the last 12 years. And she said that it had retreated almost a kilometer, the glacier, in that time. So yes, winter and summer you get changes, but not it shouldn't retreat to that extent. And this was this glacier, the whole time we were there, as we approached, the water was just covered in tiny bits of ice, a bit like a slush puppy kind of thing. And then as you got closer, there was bigger and bigger pieces. And when you come near a glacier that's calving is the technical word for when it kind of starts to fall off. There's these crack sounds and it sounds like thunder. And we were just like all on the deck. Nobody opened their mouth. Nobody told us to be quiet. We were just watching this as it was just crumbling in front of us. And then a massive piece come off and then you get a huge wave, like, and then you hear kind of sounds of the sea almost. And we saw them, we saw calving happen all the time we come up to the glaciers. And it was great having Sarah there because she was saying, yes, it's retreated half a kilometre in the 12 years since I've been here. And every time we come back, it's gone back further and further and further. And the other thing I noticed was there's no one around. There's just nothing. So Antarctica also has nothing, but it's teeming with life. Like there's penguins popping in and out of the water. There's whales. Every day you see whales. There's birds. There's seals. There's life there. But where the Arctic was, I saw two unfortunate seals on a tiny piece of ice at different times on their own. Nothing. You get birds, all right. We saw one family or school of beluga whales that were the only whales we saw. We saw two polar bears. The first polar bear looked in desperate state. He was brown. He was dirty. You know, like he looked hungry. And the second one we met on the pack ice. And we saw a few puffins. But there's no life there. The whalers have taken all the whales. And so I don't know what the fishery's like. I know it's a very extensively fished area. So it feels very desolate, very peaceful. But there has been a meeting and the cups are on the table and the cleaner hasn't come in. That's exactly what it feels like.
And when you're bearing witness to that and you're almost part of the first draft of history of a climate change moment in effect, and you connect it back to your why and why you're there and what it is you're trying to do and what your North Star metric is, do you come closer to it or further away in those moments?
Closer, because I'm learning why I go to extreme places. Firstly is I've come from like an ordinary housing estate in Dundalk and there was no one in my line of sight who was an explorer or an astronaut or somebody who kind of dared to dream big. You know, I grew up in the 80s, you're lucky to get a job kind of thing. You did a degree to get a job. And, you know, I am a dreamer, you know, and I am somebody that aspires to, I'm very hopeful as a person. And so every time I go there, I kind of see how do I deal with it because I am an introvert and can I capture this? How do I tell this story better? How do I share this? And I'm trying to develop my own language around that so that when I see the Earth from a distance, that you know, people will understand the way I describe things and they like it and they trust it, so that hopefully it'll amplify further.
Because that is the overarching ambition, moonshot, is what?
Is to see the earth from a distance, because it is an incredible moment of unity for people who have seen it or who get the chance to hear an astronaut describe it. So it's called the overview effect. So basically, astronauts who are orbiting Earth, they are absolutely transfixed by the planet. They can't take their eyes off it. They say it's the most beautiful thing they've ever seen. And I asked a few before, I remember Nicole Stott, I said, is it kind of like the way you feel towards babies that you're related to? And she goes, that's exactly what it's like. You feel this connection immediately. Like if nobody told you, you'd know you came from there. But they say that they understand that in that moment that Earth is this fragile living thing. There's clouds, there's things happening down below. What happens on one side of the planet affects the other. And that, you know, we are protected by this thin, thin atmosphere that gives us the oxygen that we have to breathe, but it also protects us from harsh radiation from space. And there's nothing around us and nothing is coming anytime soon to protect us from ourselves. And that there are this notion of countries and boundaries, that's all made up. They're all things that we have made up, and it's supposed to be just geographical markers, but we've become so tribal in identifying ourselves and putting ourselves in groups. We are one species of hundreds of other species. So astronauts say that there should be poets and artists and writers in order to capture that. And being on the ship with 30 other artists, I would absolutely echo that. So my North Star is my chance, my shot to see if I can capture that and describe it in a way that I can go into a classroom, I can go, you know, to science events, I can go to family events, or I can go to main stages, and everybody gets that. So it's not just the people that are interested in space that hear that, because unfortunately they're the only people that are hearing that now. Astronauts are incredible people, but not everybody gets to stand in front of an astronaut and hear them.
You are a very important role model for young girls, young women, increasingly finding their way into STEM.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking to the BT Young Scientists, the three sisters, shortly in the programme. Are you conscious of that role modelling now, the importance of staying curious, constantly learning, constantly asking the questions, but making sure there are young women, young girls finding their way into that world of thinking about astronomy, thinking about science, thinking about climate change, sustainability and beyond?
Absolutely, Anya. What I do is I try to focus on family, because I'm the product of the house that I grew up in. So even though, you know, I grew up in the 80s and, like, you know, don't be thinking that, don't be getting good ideas in your head. My parents told me from a very young age, you're going to college. And my dad made me very comfortable around science, and both of them encouraged us to be curious. So I had a confidence around that. It's because of my parents that I have that. And it was the biggest gift they ever gave me. Not all houses have that. So, you know, a project that I'm involved in that I've been working on since 2022 is called Town Scientist. And the idea is to provide a trusted advisor of science in every town, so that we break down this barrier that people have about, oh, I'm no good at science, I'm no good at math. I don't believe that's true. I believe science should be in our culture and in our everyday life. And that requires us to plant a scientist in every town, so that when you're in Tesco or wherever you prefer to do your shopping, or Centre or Super Value, wherever they are, that you can go up to that person and go, I read that last night. Is that true or not? So if the parents are confident, it trickles down into the family. So that's my biggest contribution, because people are doing fabulous things in schools already. I want to work on the family. So Town Scientist is my contribution to changing equality and equity around education and STEM.
Well, the continued best of luck to you, Niamh Shaw, science communicator, author, STEM ambassador, and so, so much more. The best of luck with that moonshot and all that you are doing in the world around you.
Thanks, Anya.